Japan has a big problem. So this country has 9 million empty homes, aka Akiya, because of the rapidly declining and aging population. Some people see it as a huge problem, but I like to turn those problems into opportunity by helping people fill them up. But it's not easy. And today we have someone who's going to explain why this might be a challenge. So let's go talk to him.
Hi, Ziv. Welcome back to the channel.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's been a while.
It's been a while. You're the first person to appear three times on my channel.
Wow.
Yeah, that's another. Long form videos. But you're here in Tokyo again.
Yes.
What brought you here?
The summit.
Oh,
which you're going to be speaking
right.
at.
That's right. Yeah. The summit. Yeah. it's happening this weekend. So, you know, we got together in Shibuya to talk about Akiya because I know you're anti-Akiya.
What? No. I'm not anti-Akiya.
Wait, what?
I personally wouldn't invest in an Akiya. It's a totally different statement.
Oh, you're not anti-Akiya.
No. They're wonderful investments for people who know what they're getting into and are interested in that. Yeah. We get a lot of customers buying Akiya too. So I'm geeky by nature. I'm a lot better with Excel sheets than I am with my hands. Mm. And I like my investments to be as, I don't like to say passive because no investment is passive, but as close to passive as possible. And creative people like you are the stark opposite of that, right? Mm. Like you are involved, you are there, you've got ideas, you're gonna do this, you're gonna do that. You deal with the contractors, you find the best way to make that vision come true. I'm, and a lot of our customers are more into checking Excel sheets, signing off and moving on to the next deal when the money starts coming in. That's what I like about the types of properties I invest in, and Akiya are anything but that. Mm-hmm. But having said that, as you know very well, they make good bucks if you're into being that hands-on.
I mean, there are definitely pros and cons, but if you do it right, I think it can do pretty good. Now I own 7 properties, and so far I'm pretty happy with the portfolio performance, knock on wood. Hopefully that'll stay.
Speaking of wood, so that's what I was going to ask you as well, is when you get into these projects, you know what you're getting into, right?
Yeah.
But I'm sure that you get hit on by customers who just have this very vague idea of what an Akiya is, mm-hmm. how they can invest in it, what they can expect to get. So there's a lot of education involved in that to make sure that people know what they're doing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there are definitely a lot of challenges. I mean, things are cheap for a reason, right?
Yeah.
Usually you're buying someone else's problem, and if you know how to solve those problems, you get rewarded. Mm. But if you're just buying something because it's cheap, you're getting into trouble, right?
Yes,
especially if you don't know how to fix those problems, or if you don't know people who can fix those problems, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I like the concept of who, not how. I understand the how, but instead of like me doing everything, I like to kind of assemble people who, you know, who are experts in, like, you know, solving each of those issues, right?
So we're exactly the same in that regard, but I think we probably look for different team members for what we do, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So we look for the best creative accountants, we look for the best property managers who know how to deal with tenants on a more regular basis. Mm-hmm. We try to work with the agents who can smoothen the purchase process because most of our clients are non-resident foreigners.
Yeah.
But you must be looking for contractors, for renovators, for carpenters, right?
Yeah, I enjoy it. And to be honest, you know, it's good for content as well. People enjoy it.
Yeah, it's way sexier than the kind of properties that I deal with.
And I do like the fact that I get this sense, maybe it's just me, but get this sense that, you know, revitalizing is something that most people don't want, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. My wife and business partner, Chikako, by the way, is a lot more into Akiya than I am for exactly that reason.
Yeah.
For, like, the thing that hurts her the most is to see somebody buying one of these beauties, tearing it down and building, an apato, right?
Yeah.
That just drives her up the wall.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel the same way. Yeah. So it does feel good when things work, but it's, you know, it has to be a business, meaning make money, right?
Of course.
Then take money away from you. So that part can be a big challenge, but you just got to know what to expect. So you're not personally investing in Akiya.
No.
So what do you invest in? What kind of stuff?
It depends on how much money I've managed to put aside / what loans I'm currently eligible for.
Mm-hmm.
If I've got the budget for it, my favorite is always multi-unit family building. I guess in the US they call them multi-family investment, but they're not necessarily family properties. So you'd have a small building, let's say 2 to 4 floors, usually wooden or steel framed wood. Each floor would have somewhere between 2 to 4 doors. So we're talking about something between 2 to, let's say, 12 units that usually fits within a budget of up to Ichioku, hopefully a bit less depending on location.
Yeah. So 1 億 is 100 million yen,
which is about 750,000 US at the moment. Hopefully less than that, but sometimes as high as that if it's a good location. Mm-hmm. That gives us a lot of creative freedom, not like yours. We're not going to tear it down and you know, build a single family home there. But if we want to repurpose some of the units as an Airbnb, if I've got somebody who wants to buy a building, use one of the units for when they come to Japan and tenant the rest of them, rent them out to commercial tenants like lawyers, accountants who sometimes like to rent out like these residential looking units as an office. All of the things that I can't really do with a single condo unit.
That is definitely an advantage, yeah. Mm. Especially, you know, if you're a foreign resident and want to invest in something like multi units, right?
Yes.
And like, well, I want a unit for myself, but I want to rent the rest out.
Exactly.
Like you could do that.
Yes.
Where in single family Akiya, you absolutely can. It's either or, right?
It's a single tenant kind of property, right? You could buy a bunch of condo units in individual buildings, but then you run into problems with the owner union because they don't like, okay, if you're not using the property yourself more than 2 months a year, you have to rent it out short term or medium term in the interim when you're not using it. Very difficult to do in a strata situation with the owner union in place. But if you own the entire structure, as long as zoning regulations with the municipality allow it, then you can pretty much do whatever you want with your unit.
So those are some big pros. What are some cons about multi-unit investing?
Well, you gotta be more financially disciplined with yourself, right? There's no owner union, there's no reserve fund, no one's gonna take care of the structure for you. You have to put money aside.
Right.
And you also have to make sure that you also have the financial discipline to not withdraw your income in a hurry to bring it back home, right? Yeah. Like if you own a single condo unit, it's giving you 200 bucks a month or whatever the case may be, you're naturally gonna let the money accrue to save on transfer fees. But when you're getting 2,000-3,000 bucks a month in rental income, it's very tempting to just put in a recurring remittance to just send the money back home every month. If you do that, something suddenly happens at the property, you would suddenly need to transfer funds back to Japan to pay for the repairs at very short notice, at very unattractive rates a lot of the time. Mm. So it just takes a lot more discipline and a bigger financial buffer, mm-hmm. I would say.
In terms of locations, which areas are you looking at or do you help people?
Similar to other types of properties if I can make it, but naturally it's easier to buy a condo unit in central Tokyo than to buy a whole building with associated land parcel. So by nature of most of our budgets, we're not super duper multi-rich, we would normally be buying more suburban. Because we're buying the entire land plot, the property is gonna be a lot more expensive. It's not gonna be four times the cost of a single condo unit, it's gonna be more than that because you're buying a lot of the land as well. That tends to push us into more suburban locations just by virtue of our capital. But it does, the basics of staying within 10 minutes walk to a station if it's a single or couple sized units, or within reasonable access to parking spaces if it's a family-sized unit in a city that's large enough and stable enough population-wise to give me a robust tenant base in a location that's... So if it's a smaller city, I want to be at least within an hour to a major metropolitan center. Or if it's a smaller city, but it's the biggest city in that prefecture, that's also kind of a hub, so that's okay for me as well.
Okay, so I know you're based in Fukuoka.
Yep.
So you're probably biased towards Fukuoka or surrounding
cities. For living, for investment, it's not as attractive as it used to be.
So if you had 1 yoku, 100 million yen right now, and you have to invest it into multifamily, multi-unit property, where would you invest it and why? Today.
I would firstly probably try to target Osaka. It's getting quite hard to find good deals there. There are swarms of foreign investors.
It's a hot market.
Yes, very hot market. But I'd watch it very closely to see if I can nab one. Because in my case, I don't need to wait for my clients to give me the green light. As soon as I see something, I can pounce on it. With them, if I have to wait for their reply with time differences, often the next day the property is already gone.
Wow.
So that would be the top location I would try to hit. Otherwise, if I can get into Central Saitama City, I like that. It's 30 minutes to Tokyo and it's small enough to still be low enough price-wise. Mm-hmm. Yokohama, as long as it's not too far from the central four or five stations around the port. Fukuoka, I mean, we've got a few in Fukuoka, so I'd probably diversify, but if something interesting comes up in Fukuoka. And Kyoto, there's not many deals, not many small buildings out of Kyoto. A lot of, most of them are townhouses and single-family homes. But similar to Osaka, when a deal comes out of Kyoto, I'll pounce on it.
Yeah, if I had the capital to invest, or just if I see a great deal, I think I would go Osaka. in Fukuoka, those two markets outside of...
Well, the only reason I'm not including Fukuoka is because we're already heavily invested in it.
Right, I want to
diversify.
Yeah.
But yes, it's one of the best destinations in the country, although, again, not nearly as attractive as it was when we started like 13, 14 years ago.
Sure.
It was literally unknown then.
So in terms of the returns, what kind of returns can an investor expect from these multi-unit properties?
Again, if you're looking for super central Tokyo or Osaka, the typical maybe 3-4%. More suburban locations in other cities, we can usually get up to 5-6%. Just so we're on the same page, we're talking about net pre-tax. So including all of your purchase and all of your known running and management costs, not including your annual taxes. Yeah, so in Tokyo, central Tokyo, central Osaka, 3-4% if we're lucky, probably not Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Other places as high as 6-6.5.
Mm.
All the places that we would recommend anyway.
Right, because those areas, I mean, you're going after capital gains too, right? So not just like cash flow.
They kind of correlate with the areas that I would highlight for capital gains, but there are some areas that definitely have capital gains that I would avoid, like central Tokyo, like Niseko. I would avoid the top range of that capital gains graph. Like the places that are the hottest would usually get very low yields.
Yeah.
So I'll buy in the same cities, but I'll get away from the center so that my yield can go up.
So what would you say to those people who are like, well, if it's 3-4%, I'd rather get my money work harder by investing in S&P 500, like index funds or something, and get like 7-8%. What's the point of investing in something using so much capital for 3-4%?
Well, first off, I also don't go for 3-4%.
Oh, okay.
I'm aiming for the 5-6, in my case, maybe 7-7.5, because I don't have the extra middleman that my clients have in me.
Right.
So there's a bit of saving there. But aside from that, it's all diversity, right? Like I was investing only in real estate until a few years ago, and now I want to invest in other things. So first I diversified to different countries, then I diversified to different asset classes. Now I'm doing a little bit more stocks. And S&P 500, by the way, if you choose, pick your individual stocks, you can do way better than 7-8%. Just put a little mind into it. But yeah, I also like to diversify. So I would answer like, I would have the same answer to somebody who asks me, why would I invest in stocks and not in that? Because I want to diversify. I want to diversify geographically, socioeconomically. So whenever anything happens in the world, it is most likely that if something goes down, something else in my portfolio will go up as a result.
Yeah.
That's how I try to position myself and a lot of our clients as well. And there's the Japan angle too, right? Like a lot of people love Japan. They want to invest in something in Japan.
I guess if you're owning the whole building, you can basically do what you want, right?
Like within municipal regulations.
Yeah, within municipal. Wherein, if you just own a single unit of a larger property, you can't really do like short-term rentals like Airbnb like or anything like that.
That's correct? Right. So with single condo units, short-term stays is almost always a no-no.
Like
legally, the owner union has to specifically write in the owner union rulebook that they allow it, and 99% of them would never do that. With buildings, it's similar to single-family homes in the sense that as long as the local municipality is okay with it, then you can potentially get a license. You might have to spruce some things up in the building, but eventually you'll be able to get a license. The advantage there compared to a single-family home is that you have multiple units in that building, so you can experiment. Like, for example, some of our clients purchase these buildings with tenants already in there, so all the units are long-term leased, and then as tenants move out one by one, they convert some of the units into short-term stay, Airbnb, monthly stays, commercial rentals. They experiment. Whereas if you experiment with a single-family home, first off, the expense is a lot bigger because you have to deck out the entire house, not just like a single room or two rooms. And secondly, if that doesn't work and you're not getting too many bookings, all you can do is just start scaling back and go back to long-term leases, right? With the buildings, I've got one unit's functioning as an Airbnb. If it does well, next time another tenant leaves, I'll turn another one. If it doesn't, it's very little effort to turn it back to a normal lease.
Okay, so there is a flexibility, or you can diversify how you want to set up your units if you have like multiple units.
And if it's going really well, then you just put a few signs in the building saying, hey, we're converting the building into a minpaku.
Right.
We apologize in advance for any disturbances. Your tenant will eventually move out. They're not interested in living in the same building with a short-term stay, which also saves me from the issue of having to terminate, not renew the lease and pay them a compensation. They just kind of leave of their own accord eventually.
In your opinion, from your experience, like what's like the sweet spot of the number of units. Like, what's that? What's a good number of units for multi-unit? Or it really depends on where and
your budget. I'd say if your budget is, let's say, up to a million US, or let's call it up to Ichioku, up to 700, 750 US, I would stick to up to three floors. I don't go by number of units, more by floors.
Because
once you hit fourth and fifth floors, if you don't have an elevator, which you normally wouldn't have in a wooden building, it becomes a lot harder to rent out those top floor units. Even the third floor can be iffy.
And then the maintenance. If it breaks, or something.
And if it is a bigger building with an elevator, you want to make it at least 8-9 floors or more, because 5-6, legally you have to have an elevator in the building if it's 6 floors or more. But if it's just 6 floors, elevators are so heavy on the maintenance expenses that it's not worth it unless the building is really large. So again, if you're under Ichioku, I'd stick to up to 3 floors. If you can, they're rare, but if you can find a building where with mixed unit sizes, like let's say top floor is 2 family units, bottom 2 floors are 3 studios, for example, that gives you, again, more diversity in the type of tenants that you would be attracting. And it also gives you more versatility with those bigger units for yourself to use for whatever you want. Airbnb as well does better when it's a bigger property, rooms-wise. So if you can find something with bigger rooms or a mixture of different room sizes, that's the best.
Let's talk about property management. So it sounds like a lot of work, whether it's long-term rentals, especially short-term rentals. How does one find a good property management to manage multi-unit property?
If they're in Japan and speak, read, write Japanese, not a big deal. Internet reviews will tell you all you need to do about all you need to know about the property managers. Just make sure you're reading landlord reviews and not tenant reviews, because from a landlord's perspective, tenants complaining about their property manager being too strict is exactly what you want as a landlord, right? But if you're seeing landlord reviews saying, oh, he hasn't paid me my dues on time, or, you know, the reporting wasn't good, those are the kind of reviews you want to watch out for. If you're not residing in Japan, if it's in a big city and it's a short-term stay property manager, there are at least a handful in every big city that are reliable and good to work with. You'll find them in English if you Google it. Smaller townships are going to be more challenging if you're not here, read, write, speak the language. So then you would probably have to go through either somebody like us, who's acting as your proxy in Japan and gives them a Japanese face to deal with and a Japanese bank account to deposit funds into. Or alternatively, depending on the size of your investment, it might be worth to just hire somebody who's going to be your liaison in Japan, right? Let's have somebody on the page.
Typically, if you were to hire property management, what kind of fees can an investor expect?
There's no legal mandate, but the industry standard is 5% of the gross rental income plus tax, so 5.5%, and 1 or 2 months of placement and advertising fees whenever they place a new tenant instead of a vacated one, normally. Some areas of the country where there aren't that many property management companies, like some of the rural prefectural capitals, will charge 7, 8, 9, 10% even. Some nationwide companies that say they have an office in each city will also charge higher fees. We haven't seen any huge difference in working with the pricier ones versus the 5% ones. So I'd stick to 5%. If you're actually managing a whole portfolio with your property manager, they'll usually make it 4 or 3% as well.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I should negotiate with my property manager.
Yeah, 7 is big enough.
So mixed-use multi-unit property. Yep. So say like you have one unit of short-term rental and then the rest is long-term rental. So how would property management...
It would usually be a company that can do both, because the property management companies that manage entire buildings need to be concerned with the structure as well, do some annual maintenance on the structure, make sure that the fire safety equipment is up to date. It's a little bit of a different field of expertise compared to a condo or a single home unit, property management. And then those companies would usually not be able to handle short-term stays. Their MO is strictly long-term residential. So you have to look a little bit harder to find companies that can do both. Or if they're open to it, let the building manager know that just this unit is going to be managed by that company. They'll report to you. So if they're open to that, which again is hard to find, but that's another way to do it.
Can non-resident foreigners get a loan to get multi-unit properties in Japan?
Yes, but officially, that has to be strictly for long-term lease purposes.
Oh,
you're not allowed
right?
to do Airbnb short-term commercial might be okay if it's long term, but not anything medium or short.
Really? So you can get a loan?
You can get a loan if you set up a Japanese corporate structure.
Okay.
And if you appoint a Japanese resident as representative director, so which maybe, are solutions that companies like ours and others can offer as well.
What would your biggest piece of advice be for someone who wants to get started with multi-unit investing in Japan?
First, get all your financial ducks in a row. So have the capital plus some reserves and know that you're locking it in for a while. Don't be expecting to pull it back every month, like everything that we just discussed.
Yeah. Is real estate investing experience required for multi-unit either?
I don't know if it's experience per se, because most of our clients have never purchased in Japan. So whatever experience they have overseas can actually be counterintuitive. Actually, we run into trouble with some clients who think they know exactly what they're doing because it's worked overseas, but it totally doesn't work here.
Yeah.
But I'd say more than experience, it's the mindset of an experienced investor, right? Like my best clients are people who have already invested in a bunch of stuff, a bunch of times over the years, and they're not too phased when something happens because they know it's an investment. It's not a term deposit in the bank that pays you clockwork every month the exact same amount. Things will go up and down, something, especially if you're short-term stay, things will be seasonal. They will fluctuate. There will be issues with the property or with the tenant or with the property manager or with another professional company that we're working with, which will need to be addressed. If this is your first ever time investing and it's your entire life savings, you're going to be panicking every time something happens. At least educate yourself on what investment is like and try to adopt the investor mindset. I'm not saying don't care. Of course, they care about stuff, but don't let your emotions go with the ebbs and flows of the investment. It's an investment. You look at it long term.
That's an awesome piece of advice. Thank you for your time today. At IKEA Hub, we have a lot of people, members, who are looking for multi-unit investment opportunities. I've been doing just single family homes, so we didn't have much experience. But now we are partnering with Ziv. You can get help from Ziv. So make sure to get more information. I put the links below in the description, so you can get more information to learn how to move forward if you're interested in investing in multi-unit property in Japan. Super exciting.
Same here. Yeah. See you all on Akihab.
All right, well, thanks for watching. See you in the next one.
Bye-bye.